is Maytag Month, and Menards is passing the savings on to you. You need reliable and energy-efficient appliances to conquer the day. Menards is your one-stop shop with appliances in stock and ready to take home today. Check out our top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Save big money on Maytag appliances at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to CEO Alistair Smith of Evacta, a leading life sciences firm developing innovative new cancer treatments and powerful diagnostics. So welcome, Alistair.
Morning, Paul.
Well, a lot's been happening since we last spoke, only in September, not least today's excellent phase 1A trial data for AVA6000, which is being developed to treat soft tissue sarcoma. But before we sort of dig into the details, I don't suppose you could quickly remind investors of how the drug works and also the sort of the broader precision platform.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so AVA6000 is the first drug based on Evacta's proprietary precision platform, the first one to get into human trials. And, you know, it's special because the drug is inert when it's administered to the patient. So it's only activated in the tumor by an enzyme called FAP, of which there is a large amount in most solid tumors compared to the rest of the body. So that's designed to release the drug in the tumor to improve the safety and the tolerability for patients, and then ultimately the efficacy. I'm sure we're going to get onto the data in a minute. So in the case of AVA6000, we're delivering a chemotherapy called doxorubicin into the tumor tissue. And as you said, doxorubicin is used to treat, soft tissue sarcoma as a monotherapy first line, but also used in combination to treat other indications like breast and ovarian.
Right. Okay, good. Now, I remember when we first chatted 2.5 years ago, this was before the first patient was dosed at the Royal Marsden Hospital. And I asked you what the sort of primary end goal was for the phase 1A part of the AVA6000 trial. And I remember recalling, you basically said, look, we're really only concentrating on safety here. And if we get it such that we can still dose sort of doxorubicin at its current level, but in a more safe environment, that will be a big for the industry and for patients, a big tick in the box, because it was hopefully then should be able to extend chemotherapies to a lot more people and to more cycles and stuff like that. So in that lens, can you just quickly sort of like talk through how the actual trial has, you know, what it's actually come out with so far, first starting with the safety in terms of that end goal, you know, and then obviously we'll go on to the efficacy side.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, I mean, we started off with very pragmatic, sensible aims in a safety study. I think it's fair to say that, you know, what we have now has exceeded all expectation, and the overarching takeaway message from the data we released this morning is that precision is doing exactly what it was intended to do. So to target the activation of a chemotherapy in the tumor and spare the healthy tissue. So that's got multiple effects. First of all, the quality of life for patients whilst on treatment is improved. And, you know, there are some very severe side effects of doxorubicin that are life-threatening, but there are also many other side effects that are debilitating and very unpleasant, such as mouth ulcers that make it very difficult to eat when on doxorubicin. So first of all, you know, we're in a position where we can see now that we can improve the quality of life of patients, and that was probably our aim when we started the safety study. But as I say, we've far exceeded that now. You know, the fact that we have such a safe drug means that we can begin to think about optimizing the dose. I think, as you mentioned, you know, potentially more, certainly more cycles. What we're going to start exploring now is a fortnightly, so a two-weekly dosing. So the study, doxorubicin in general is only dosed three-weekly because of the side effects. And so the first part of the study has been a three-weekly study, as you would expect. We're now in a position to be able to look at a two-weekly, a fortnightly study. And that is now screening patients in the US. So we'll be dosing patients very shortly in the US. And that will allow us to optimize a new dosing regime for AVA6000 that should generate better outcomes, better response rates for patients as well. So improved quality of life, fantastic. And now we have the opportunity to really drive forwards in the development of the drug and improve the response rates as well and better outcomes for patients.
And on the actual dosage level as well, I mean, obviously, you know, it gives you optionality in terms of the frequency, you know, of the actual the cycles, etc. But in terms of the actual dosage level, in cohort 7, I understand it's 3.5 times the level of standard doxorubicin, but that still isn't a maximum dose, is it? I mean, how should investors interpret that? Because to me, as a layman, it looks as though, you know, you really are only getting the FAP activated, you know, prodrug cleaving on the tumor. It's not happening anywhere else within the body in any other, well, it doesn't seem to be anyway. It doesn't cause a problem that it is.
Yeah, but basically correct. But what we see in the data is exactly what you would expect, which is predominantly the drug is released in the tumor tissue. As everyone knows, and we've talked about many times, there is a background level of FAP around the body, and you will get some leakage of the drug from the tumor, but you can see it's predominantly in the tumor. So we haven't reached an MTD, but as I've described, the path forward now is to optimize the dosing. By moving to a fortnightly, rather than continuing on the old-fashioned, if you like, three-weekly dosing. We know from years of chemotherapy development that more frequent dosing should give better outcomes to patients. So it's right to now move on to that arm of the study.
Brilliant. Okay, just now on the efficacy side then, so what has been sort of like determined so far, you know, in that the phase 1a trial? Because I did notice that one of the patients has had a significant reduction in tumor size.
Yeah, so we've in the presentation this morning we've given a few case studies. We've said many times, and I'll just repeat it, you know, in a phase 1a safety study, patients are not selected to try and get an efficacy signal. That's not the purpose. And what that means is that all of these patients have been pre-treated with other drugs. They're all late stage patients with advanced disease. So they're not selected to get it's not an efficacy study is what I'm saying. But there are some very clear and really encouraging signals. And we've given some case studies, the first of which is a 59-year-old male with something called undifferentiated pleomorphic sarcoma, UPS. And that's the one I think you're referring to, where there is a very significant reduction of 65% reduction in tumor size in that patient. And that is ongoing. And there has been a duration of that response for more than 6 months. So, and of course, that patient's, but that patient is in the third cohort. So they're on 160 mgs per meter squared, which means they're on a relatively low dose. So they can have many more cycles of treatment. Case studies like that are hugely positive.
Yeah. Great. And then, okay, so what are the next steps then? We've obviously got the just finishing off cohort 7 and completing the fortnightly cycle test out in the States, etc. Can you just take us through how you sort of see the timelines, because I know there was a sort of like a hope that we're going to start the sort of pivotal stage two or phase two study sometime next year, but that has a number of different dependencies.
Yes. Well, I think you've summarized it very well there. The key now is to get through the 2 weekly dosing study as quickly as possible. We anticipate, you know, maybe 3 dose cohorts, possibly 4, but certainly to have concluded that 2 weekly study by the end of the second quarter of next year, so by the half year, which will allow us to start. So we're on track to start the phase two study next year as planned. And that, if successful, the phase two study is a pivotal study in the US that would lead to market approval of AVA6000. So it's a game changer for Avacta.
Good. Okay. And then just more broadly then for other candidates within the precision platform, I know you've got the second candidate, hopefully starting preclinical sometime next year, AVA3996, I think it is. But in terms of learnings that you can transfer from the sort of phase 1A study to those other candidates, and likewise, sort of what this, what you've seen in the phase one, what that means for the wider, broader sort of precision platform?
Yeah, well, for the platform, we are, you know, absolutely clear. I mean, it's unequivocal that the precision platform, the concept of the precision technology being cleaved by FAP and releasing drug in the tumor, you know, that works. Mm-hmm. So for the platform, the current study's been, you know, a validation of the mechanism. So that is transferable across to other chemotherapies, such as the proteasome inhibitor in 3996. But of course, that's a different drug. It's a new drug. You know, that will have to go through the same sort of development process with a safety study and so on. There is definitely a read across in terms of the platform. And that allows us, of course, to push on with our business development to, you know, to partner the platform with people, as well as being able to develop, you know, our own drugs in our in-house pipeline.
Okay, good. And there are sort of, I guess, you know, the learnings that you've done with sort of cohort 1 to 7 or different frequencies or different dosage levels and stuff like that. So that's only going to help, isn't it? The background knowledge. I know it's a different drug.
Yes, yeah, of course it helps. It's a good body of data that gives us a lot of confidence. But yeah, as you say, each drug is a different drug, so the safety, etc., and the dosing will be different for each drug. Yeah.
Okay. And how big is the sort of addressable market then? Just in total, I have read somewhere that it's multi-$1 billion, and that's just using the standard chemotherapies without the sort of the prodrug benefit.
Yeah, well, it is very difficult to put and probably not very productive to put some numbers on it. But, you know, precision works. I don't think it could be clearer than that. The data is unequivocal. So I wouldn't go overboard because we're clearly still at a relatively early stage and we're just at the beginning of the value curve for Avacta.
Yeah.
So since precision's a platform technology, we've now got the potential to develop our own drugs, as we've just talked about, and partnerships of the platform and our assets. So there's really a large number of potential therapies. So difficult to put a figure on that. But, you know, if each one became the standard of care, then the opportunity is vast, isn't it?
Yeah. And those, just finally then, on that optionality that you know, you have in terms of sort of, you know, going forward, whether you do it in-house or whether you partner or whatever like that. When do you think you sort of seriously will decide about, you know, to really review those optionalities as we get closer towards the sort of the start of the phase two? How do you see that sort of panning out?
Well, if you're asking for a sort of commercial strategy, perspective, yeah. I think I've said before, and I absolutely believe it's critical for us to maintain our lead clinical program. So we would not be aiming to partner AVA6000, of course, unless there was, you know, an extremely compelling opportunity or something that was very targeted into a particular geography, for example. So our commercial strategy is to develop AVA 6000 through phase two. Now we will at some point in phase two be looking more keenly at partnering, because you know, if we want to take that into larger studies, phase three studies, then you know we're going to really have to have a partner to do that. So our commercial strategy is to maintain an active clinical development pipeline of our own that delivers maximum value to shareholders, but also to be partnering the platform, the precision platform, because we can do that with third parties that have their own toxins, for example, that might want to target those into the tumor themselves. So there's plenty of opportunity to commercialize and monetize the work that we've done so far without actually partnering our assets at this stage.
Brilliant. Okay, well, big congrats again for today's terrific news, and really looking forward in hearing about that sort of commercialized strategy in 2024, and likewise the clinic, continue with the clinical data for the final bits and pieces for phase one. So thanks again for your time, Alistair, and happy Christmas.
Thank you. Absolute pleasure. Thanks, Paul. Cheers.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.